This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, March 21st, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm joined once again by Luke, who I know is super jazzed up about the InvestTalk Market Madness. That's why he's back for a fourth day in a row. How's your bracket doing?
My bracket is doing okay. Unfortunately, I am not in the lead right now. I know that title is currently shared by three of our listeners, so I'm kind of jealous of them.
Yeah, it's tight after the first 3 days, and we'll announce the winners of today's matchups in a bit, as well as preview the upcoming matchups for the end of round one, that is tomorrow, in the income group. So we'll get to that here in a little bit. But as a reminder that this is a show about you. Show is about your questions, your concerns, and it's about educating you and helping you become a better investor. And we do that mainly by answering those questions. So don't be afraid to reach out. 888-99-CHART is the number to get through and ask your question at any time, 24/7, 365. Leave a message. If you aren't listening live, no big deal. Leave a message. We will answer it on a future show. Now, we're going to talk about the market performance for today, as well as run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin. Luke, I'm calling today about Occidental Petroleum, ticker symbol OSY. A friend of mine mentioned that he's been hearing a lot about the oil and gas space, and he's looking into Oxy. He says Warren Buffett owns it. And looking at the stock and wondering if you think it's a good buy right now at these 5 points. I think it usually reloads at a certain price. It doesn't really look cheap to me. I just wondering if you can take a quick look at it. Let me know your thoughts if it's a good buy right now. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
We're looking at Occidental Petroleum, a large cap independent E&P oil operator. They have operations here in the United States, Latin America, and the Middle East. And you're right, they have gotten a lot of pub over the past couple of years because Warren has been a big buyer of these shares, especially compared to, you know, maybe more well-known oil names like an Exxon and Chevron. And so more eyeballs are on this name. Now, their earnings have come down a bit from $9.35 in 2022. This year, they're supposed to make $3.40. Right? Profitable, very profitable still, but obviously the earnings trajectory is on the downslide. But, you know, is it too expensive? I'm looking at some multiples here, which on their face, Luke, about 6x enterprise value to EBITDA. That's not bad, but I've seen many others within the space selling closer to 4 or 5x. So, you know, has all that hype around Warren buying shares caused this to be maybe overpriced compared to its competitors?
That could be the case. I mean, if you look at the sector broadly, it's near the average. Its price to book is a 2.55 relative to the sector average of 2.31. Its margins are on the lower end of the top five names in terms of its competitors within the sector, but its cash flow and its profitability have been improving. And from a debt perspective, it still is in a good situation. It looks like it's not too over-levered. It's interest coverage ratio sits at about 6, so it doesn't really have it wouldn't really suffer should the profits of the company drop in terms of being able to cover its interest. But taking a look at it relative to its margins compared to its peers and how it's in the top 25% in terms of its price to book value, it looks a little bit expensive to me. I don't know if I would necessarily pick it up at this price.
Yeah, I think you have better alternatives, and this is a name, as Luke said, that its balance sheet is fine, but it's more elevated than most. You know, although it has made a lot of improvement, I believe they made a large acquisition. I can't remember what it was, but their debt went from, in 2019, mid-year, went from about $10 billion all the way up to $47 billion. And they've slowly whittled that down as their cash flow has been pretty robust, $6 billion trailing 12 months in free cash flow. They've whittled that down to $19 billion in debt, which is compared to a market cap of $56 billion and a free cash flow of $6 billion. That's fine. It's not a crazy amount of debt. But there are many, many companies in this space that have no debt and so don't have much interest expenses on a yearly basis. So as Luke said, the multiples are a bit higher than average, but I would expect their balance sheet to be super clean in that case, and that's not the case here. So I just think there are better opportunities in the oil and gas space, although I like the space overall. Now let's go talk to Sid. He is in North Carolina looking at Rio Tinto. You own it or looking to buy it?
Hi, Justin. Thank you. Yes, I do have a Rio Tinto in my portfolio, maybe less than 0.5%. Mm-hmm. And so far not doing good. I mean, I purchased at around $80 and currently it's around $60, $65. But the major concern that I had when I looked at the number once again, they don't have any insiders or any institutions count, but the other fundamentals looks good. So I thought, should I hold it or add more or shall I sell it off? Just wanted to take your expert opinion. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the call. And this is Rio Tinto out of the UK, and it is one of the largest basic material companies in the world. It's a miner of all different types of raw materials from copper, aluminum, diamonds, gold, and industrial minerals. But iron ore is its dominant commodity that it sells. And iron ore prices have certainly underperformed some of the other metals, such as copper, aluminum, gold. And they have exposure there. But when your dominant revenue driver is iron ore, you're mainly going to be price based on that. And frankly, most investors, if they want to target a particular commodity, they're going to look for more of a pure play. And I think that's one issue here. If I'm Rio Tinto, I would be breaking this company up, spinning off pure plays in copper, in aluminum, in gold, in diamonds, etc. And that is probably something that would unlock some value here. But I just think, yeah, the fact that it is too diversified and it is so tied to iron ore, I think you have opportunities elsewhere in the material space to redeploy this capital better. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, I really have nothing to add. It's like you said, with these mining companies or with energy companies, their stock performance and their fundamental performance of the company itself is just going to be tied to the underlying commodity that makes up that business. And there's no difference in this one. 57% of its total revenue comes from iron ore. So certainly I agree with you. It may be a little bit too diversified. And because of that, when some of these commodities are doing well and others aren't, it doesn't see the full benefit of it. So where it is right now, I think it's pretty fairly priced. I don't know if it'll get back up to 80 anytime soon.
Yeah, I'd take your losses and redeploy the capital elsewhere. Let's go talk to Sammy in San Francisco looking at SMCI, Super Micro Computers. You looking to buy it, sell it, or maybe sell it short?
No, I'm looking to buy.
Okay. And what's obviously this is a name next to NVIDIA that has benefited the most from the AI craze. And what they do, they sell servers, right, Luke?
They sell server racks, yeah.
Server racks, yeah. And their revenues or earnings are going up dramatically. Made $2.48 in 2021, supposed to make $21.70 this year and $25.06 next year. But that's about, based on about $1,000 per share, $9.71 at the close today, that's about a 40 times multiple. And are you just trying to chase this momentum and you think it's going to break out? Or do you have a long-term thesis about the company?
No, I'm just looking, you know, to make some money in the short term over the next, like, few months.
Okay. Well, I think this is an area that is losing steam. You see that as of late. This stock has actually gone nowhere since mid-February. It's basically flat, right, in the mid-900s. And you know, it had a reversal on the 16th of February. It did break above that high, so that kind of negated that reversal. But then it reversed again on the 8th of this month, and then a big drop on the 18th. So, you know, the momentum is certainly waning, and I don't see this from a technical perspective as anything attractive to me. I think it looks like it's ready to roll over, so I would not be buying Supermicro. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about the Market Madness matchups for today, run down some show topics that we have planned, and break down today's market activity. But remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Now let's highlight the first set of matchups for tomorrow's InvestTalk Market Madness. And let's break that down. It is the income region, the final round of the first round, and it is AES versus Vistra Corp. AES versus Vistra Corp. And AES, for everyone out there, that is a utility company, and we actually own this for some of our clients, and it's a mid cap, I'll say $11 billion. Revenue growth is accelerating. And pays about a 4.4% dividend. Luke, tell us a little bit about Vistra.
Yeah, Vistra Corp, it's an electricity and power generation company. It's got minimal debt, surprisingly. Its cash flow is improving. Its profitability has been pretty consistent, and it's been on quite the tear over the past year, and even really over the past 2 months. So I think given its momentum, especially over the past 2 months specifically, I'm going to have to go with Vistra Corp on this one.
Ooh, this one's tough. Vistra is just at the top end of its Bollinger Band. It's very, very overbought. You're right, the momentum is good, but it looks so stretched. And AES looks like it's coming off some support. So I'll go with AES, but we shall see. The next is Clorox, 3.3% dividend yields. Be a large cap. $18 billion would be considered a large cap. We all know what Clorox does. They make cleaning products, filtration systems, trash bags, etc. Earnings trends are being downgraded, and it is trading at pretty high multiple, 26 times earnings, which is a little steep for my liking. And if you look at the chart, it is weakening. It spiked up after earnings back in early February and has been trailing off ever since. So not a great setup as we head into tomorrow. What about Tanger's Factory Outlet.
Tanger Factor Outlet, Inc., SKT, is a shopping center REIT. Pretty self-explanatory. They own a bunch of shopping centers headquartered in Greensboro, North Carolina. And from a relative strength perspective, it's kind of been a tough couple of years, which is to be expected with a lot of the REIT space. But I don't know. I think real estate versus Clorox, big name brand like that, one day I'm going to have to go with Clorox.
I'm gonna differ. I think the REITs are getting stronger. SKT certainly has much better momentum, and Clorox is trailing off. So I'm gonna go with SKT. The next matchup is Columbus McKinnon versus Sunco. And Columbus McKinnon is a small cap, $1.2 billion market cap. And they manufacture material handling systems and components for the commercial industrial markets. And as you would imagine, the industrial economy right now is on fire, and their business prospects are certainly looking up, and the charts looking up as well. Relative strength is 69. So good momentum headed into tomorrow. What about Sunoco? S-U-N.
Sunoco, household name. It's a wholesale fuel distribution company. It's a small cap, bordering on mid cap, about $5 billion. Its chart's been pretty strong over the past couple months, as has its relative strength, cash flow, and profitability, which has been pretty stable, honestly, going back to 2021. It was up 1% today. Looks pretty strong. It's only up 4% year to date. Man, this is a tough one.
I'm going Sunoco.
I think I'm going to go Sunoco too.
All right, there we go. All right, and the next matchup is Dominion Energy versus Simon Property Group. Dominion Energy, 5.5% yield. It is a large cap utility company, and it was down big on a lot of debt. I know one of their regions changed the rules around how much utility companies can earn. So some regulatory issues there, but the trends are headed up now above the 50, all the major moving averages. So at least some good near term momentum. Luke, what about Simon Property Group, SPG?
Simon Property Group, SPG, is a mixed use REIT for shopping, dining, entertainment, etc. And it's had a good couple of days. It's had a good month as well. It's up 71. Oh, no, sorry. I'm looking at the wrong company right now. Dominion is up 71 basis points today, whereas SPG is up 26 basis points. Its relative strength took a dip a couple years ago. I'm going to have to hop on the energy train. I'm going to go with Dominion.
I'm going with Simon Property Group myself. We shall see. We're going to highlight the next matchups later in the show, but we're headed to a quick break. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Well, we got so excited, Luke, about...
I was so excited.
...about the matchups for tomorrow in the income region. We forgot to announce today's winners in the consumer region of the first round. And let's go through them right now. The first winner was Mettler Toledo, MTD, and then Urban Outfitters, Gap, The Gap, Lululemon, EQH, which would be Equitable Holdings. There we go. VITL, which would be...
Vital Farms, your eggs.
Vital Farms. Oh, yeah, my eggs. I forgot. Vital Farms. Home Depot, and then BRBR, which is Bell Ring Brands. Those are the winners for the first round in the consumer region. And we'll get to our last four matchups on the income region coming up a little later in the show. But first, let's pivot over to our main focus point today. And that is about how to protect your portfolio from a potential drop in bond prices. Once again, we know 2022 was one of the worst years for bondholders in a couple of decades. And, you know, the threat now that's looming over pretty much every bondholder is duration, at least for those who own fixed income. Now, that's what most people think bonds always are. They think that you're collecting some sort of coupon, and that coupon is fixed. Well, the reality is there are instruments that go up and down with yields. We know TIPS are one of those, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, but another are leverage loans, bank loans, where if interest rates go up, then the interest those companies are paying on the debt also goes up as well. And the caveat here, and a lot of people love those in 2022 because they didn't have nearly as much duration risk. For example, in 2022, the broad U.S. stocks were down 20%. Investment grade bonds were down 13%. But the Morningstar U.S. Leveraged Loan Index fell only 0.8% that year. So kind of a godsend. And so money has been flowing there. But Luke, these leveraged loans also have a different type of risk. While they don't have as much duration risk, they do have credit risk. So how much do you think investors should really utilize these type of vehicles to hedge against that duration risk?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something to consider when you think about the different types of risk with fixed income securities, or rather debt securities. Duration risk is the risk essentially that interest rates change and the value of your investment moves because of it, based upon the convexity of the payout schedule, right? Credit risk, however, is the likelihood that you don't get anything back. So in orders of magnitude, credit risk is supremely more important than duration risk. I was seeing that only 2% of above average actively managed bank loan funds beat the index after fees over the last 10 years through February. So, you know, this is a situation where it is good to diversify. It is good to have differing types of debt securities in one's portfolio, but you can't do that without realizing what risks are associated with those types of securities. And there's certainly different risks that you have to be aware of here.
And I think it's pretty clear based on the data that they are not as good of a hedge against the interest rates rising, duration risk, as just simply owning shorter duration securities. That oftentimes is a much better way to prevent a huge drawdown in your portfolio, because you're still able, shorter duration bonds, you're still able to target better quality companies. A lot of these leveraged loans, they are businesses that, you know, they have low ratings. A lot of these are junk rated debts. A lot of them are focused on the financial services industry, and we saw that with the Silicon Valley Bank crisis last spring. Mm-hmm. That can be a problem in this environment. So I think these can be valuable, like you said, but it should be a small sliver of a bond portfolio if you're going to utilize them. And the vast majority of the structure of a bond portfolio in today's rising interest rate environment, rising inflationary environment, is shorter duration. By keeping it 2, 3, 4, 5 years, not going out and buying 15, 20 year paper that is could potentially go down another 15, 20, 30% if you have another resurgence in inflation and a more hawkish Fed once again. So this is an option, but I think should only be a small sliver of a broader portfolio. All right. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Are CEOs and shareholders taking a greater slice of the profits than one might think? Many CEOs claim economic strain to justify layoffs in the finance, tech, and media sectors, but it seems as if corporations are doing better than ever. So what is really going on? We'll dig into that story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Herrera, and we are here to help you, and we're taking your calls at 888-99-CHART. Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with Audio Companion, and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process, designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So Justin, I know that typically we like to follow this schedule of what we talk about first before we go through our focus points, but every now and then we like to change things up a little bit, keep it fresh. So, you know, one thing we didn't mention at the beginning of the show is what happened in the market today. And from my perspective, U.S. equities finishing pretty higher, the Russell 2000, of big note because it finished near its highest point since 2022. Pretty significant given it was kind of on the back burner while the S&P 500 was making new highs week after week. And a lot of that was driven by semis, banks, home builders. It was pretty broad. Gold finished up 1.1%. The big economic news was existing home sales rising and flash PMIs dipping while manufacturing overall looked a little bit better. From a jobs perspective, initial claims beat, but continuing claims are still a little bit above consensus. Kind of a mixed bag overall, yet the market still moved higher broadly. What did you see today?
I saw a mixed bag as well, but the most important factor was how we closed. And the Qs as well as the S&P closed near the lows of the day, whereas the small caps actually closed near the highs of the day. That was super odd. After hours, you had a mixed bag on earnings as well. FedEx had good earnings, whereas Nike had poor earnings. So that was a mixed bag. But to me, the most important action was the fact that we gapped up after the Fed day yesterday. That was obviously bullish. And then we traded higher through the middle part of the day. And then pretty much through the last few hours, the market trended lower and closed right pretty much at the low of the day. So I'm expecting, you know, could this have marked kind of a last flurry of short covering? As everyone digested the dovish Fed announcement that still kept three rate cuts on the table, that talked about winding down QT sometime in the back half of the year, et cetera,
robust growth.
What was that?
Robust growth as well. Can't forget that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I still think we're definitely overbought in markets. Everyone's kind of positioned a little bit too bullishly. It does feel like as we go into tax season in the next few weeks, that could also be a catalyst for people needing cash to take out of the markets to pay those taxes. It still feels like we're close to at least a reasonable market pullback. But, you know, you got to wait till that you see the whites of the eyes before you call that. But that's just my feeling. So we'll see how we end up tomorrow. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Are CEOs and shareholders taking a greater slice of – oh, never mind. Already got to that. Let's keep things moving. Play another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk. I've been a long-term listener for the past 5 years or so. I really appreciate the daily commentary and kind of learning from a more economic and investing strategy, not just a trading strategy. So I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. I was looking at the upcoming news events for this upcoming week, and on Monday, there's two IPOs. AMDL and MSFL. They are both going to be a 2x long strategy for AMD and Microsoft. So my question is concerning the underlying securities. These 2x long ETFs, are they going to affect the liquidity or trading volume for AMD and Microsoft? And could that be a bullish and or negative thing for the underlying strategies? I know you guys don't recommend holding the leveraged versions of these ETFs for longer term. So then how does this affect the underlying asset? Thank you guys. And I'm sending my prayers for Steve.
Well, if there's one thing we've learned over the past few years is option activity can have major impacts on the underlying demand for shares. And you see that mainly called a gamma squeeze. That is a big reason why Wall Street Bets was able to juice GameStop up and many of the other names that they kind of latch onto. And they do this by buying an immense amount of calls, forcing dealers to buy the underlying to hedge their risk. And that creates a reflexive move up as well as down. That's why those names have had such major amounts of volatility. So I would imagine, Luke, that these companies or these new ETF listings are also utilizing options to create that leverage. That's what options generally are, right? They're creating leverage in a position. So, you know, could the demand here have a large impact on the underlying share price? I think potentially, but it's hard to know how much money is really flowing into these things.
Volume and liquidity definitely could change, but volume and volatility work both ways, mm-hmm. right? So if you have a lot of people buying and you have a lot of people selling on leveraged trades, like that volatility works both ways. So it makes the investing experience less smooth. One thing also that I want to add, although again we say this, you shouldn't really hold these are trading funds, these are not investing funds, is you're essentially paying a management fee to do something with one singular ETF, one singular stock. You could do yourself.
Yeah.
Like if you really wanted to do this, you could just do it yourself and not pay a management fee.
Yeah, go buy with options. Some options.
So, you know, these leverage funds that are leveraged S&P 500 funds, leveraged stuff like that, I mean, you could honestly do that with E-minis as well. But oftentimes, I think the singular rule here is, in these instances, don't pay the management fee for something that's incredibly simple and risky or different things. It's simple for you to do. It's also incredibly risky for you to do.
Yeah. I mean, like AMD's at 178. Call it 180. Go buy a 90 strike call. You're going to have double leverage. So not saying you should do that, but it, that's a better alternative than buying these ETFs. They're preying on the average investor. And we know throughout history, whenever there are these thematic ETFs, and especially when there are ETFs that are targeting a specific security, they're not doing these. These fund families are not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because they know that there's so much interest that they're going to garner a certain level of assets and interest. And usually when that happens, that is a red flag. That's a signal that the general public is far too bullish on the space or on those particular names. And the odds are much better that going forward, money will flow out because there's already so much money in, as opposed to even more money flying in. Okay, because the interest is currently so high. So I wouldn't make a bet one way or the other. AMD looks like it's topped. Microsoft looks stronger, but certainly it could roll over as well. So I wouldn't take either of these issuance as a reason to buy or sell the underlying. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a bit about what we're going to cover. Yes.
Reddit.
One of your favorite websites, Luke, Reddit. Went IPO today, up 50%. But, you know, from true investors like us, those wiggles on an IPO, they're expected. It could go down 50% tomorrow. Who knows? But what's most interesting about this issuance is that it is a dual listed. They have dual listed share classes, which means that some shareholders, mostly insiders and pre-IPO investors, have superior voting rights over those who are buying these newly listed shares. So what does this say about the potential governance within Reddit? And you know, does that make it a better or worse investment going forward?
Well, I think it makes a different type of investment, right? I think Snapchat also had a dual share class at one point. It may still have that. This isn't a thing that's uncommon. It does happen from time to time. And sometimes you'll see some price premiums associated with it. But generally speaking, right, we talked about the 10 shareholder rights yesterday. That was yesterday, right? I'm kind of lost in the market madness of the week.
I know, right?
I believe yesterday we talked about the 10 shareholder rights. And one of them is the right to vote, right? To vote proxy, to bring things before the board. And so it's an important right that you have as an owner in a company to oversee that company, oversee your investment. And so in situations such as this, where you have dual share voting classes, you become essentially a second class shareholder. So, you know, this is obviously something that a lot of people were very excited about. I like the website and seeing the memes. I don't necessarily subscribe to it being an excellent business, but you know, I think this is just another example of how sometimes hyped IPOs can be a little bit misleading to retail investors.
That's usually what they are. It's what most IPOs are. They're hyped up by both the company and they hype up their numbers and their business. I've seen many channel stuffing pre-IPO to make their businesses look better than they really are. And also remember the investment banks, they have an incentive to juice up the valuation because they make a percentage of the capital that is raised. So, you know, it's usually not a great investment for those early investors in the IPO once it does go public. And then the lockup period after the 6 months, excuse me, typically brings a lot of sellers off the sidelines, and then the stock tends to underperform. So that's what most IPOs look like. And I think this is no different. And it's a bit worse because, like I said at the top, there's the dual class structure. And most dual class structures, they have automatic time-based sunset provisions, meaning that at some point in the future, yes, they're dual class today, but they won't always be that way. But Reddit doesn't have that here. And so this makes it even more difficult for fiduciary investors like ourselves, right? We're advisors, registered investment advisors. We have a duty to our shareholders to act in their best interest. And oftentimes that can mean voting in their best interest as well. And if you don't have voting rights, that makes it difficult to help them. And so it's a hyped IPO. It's interesting, and even more interesting that it is dual class. And we'll see how that may affect the company in the long run, especially for a company so reliant on advertising and also
free labor.
What was that? Free labor?
Free labor, the unpaid mods.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I guess they're paid in stock or stock availability because a lot of them did get some stock. But it'll be very interesting, too, to see, can they hold their audience over the long term? Are there other platforms that, you know, I always think of, there's OfferUp, which is the new Craigslist. Remember Craigslist? It's still around, but OfferUp has kind of usurped Craigslist. And there could be another website that eventually usurps Reddit as well. So and there's not a lot that shareholders can do to change management to try to fight off competitors, which there always will be. So very interested to see how that evolves. Now, 2024 is humming along, and we're almost through the first quarter. You may have noticed that we're in a new market environment. So obviously, cyclicals are starting to reassert themselves to the upside, while a lot of the AI growthier names are starting to lose their momentum. So the question is, are you set up for the start of this cyclicality, cyclical nature of the trends in the market? And if you are you aligned with your overall long-term goals as well? So that's a big question. And if you need help, I encourage you to reach out to us at KAPP Financial, where we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients, and we operate with the same philosophy, which is independent thinking and shared success. So you can take advantage of a free portfolio review assessment via telephone or go-to meeting. Just send us a message through investtalk.com. Now let's fit in another caller question now. You know the number. It's 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jim from Miami, Florida. Good day, Justin and Luke. And I wish a speedy recovery to Steve. Today I'm calling about Fibra Uno, FBASF. It's a diversified Mexican REIT. I've been adding REITs lately while they're in a lull to my Roth account. Hopefully I'll get a few in there before the rates drop and these REITs take off. And my question about this one is it a good investment, this one? It's hard to find any information about it since it's an international stock. The dividend seems solid and like they can cover it, but I'm really looking to you guys to see if there's any more insight you can shed upon this company. Thanks for your help, and I'll listen on the show.
All right, looking at a Mexican REIT, Fibro Uno Administración, I believe is how you pronounce it. This is a company with a lot of debt. The debt continues to rise. That's my issue here. $7.5 billion in long-term debt on a market cap of $6.8 billion. So kind of a mid-cap name. Current yield around 7.2%. That's pretty high. What are you seeing on your end, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, they pay an average of a 7.5% dividend over the past 5 years, which is good. But like you said, there's a significant amount of debt that's been increasing, and their net income has only gone up an average of 2.4% as a result over the past 5 years. So for me, the debt they're loading themselves up with isn't worth the benefit they're giving to their shareholders.
Yeah, if you look at their free cash flow, that has also, as that hit up, that's kind of flattened out here while their debt is rising. So I like what you're looking at, a REIT in Mexico, that makes sense, but I just don't love that debt load. I need a clearer picture here. And usually when you get 7.2% yield, you're taking a significant amount of risk. So I'm passing on this. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at investtalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's finish the final four matchup previews for tomorrow's income region. And first matchup is Iron Mountain IRM versus Ryman Hospitality. Iron Mountain is a REIT, and it primarily has storage. It's storage REIT, but it has expanded into document value-added services, etc. And it is on a tear. Its relative strength is 90. 3.2% yield here. Pretty nice setup heading until to tomorrow. What about Ryman?
Ryman Hospitality Properties is a resort and entertainment REIT. It's decently sized, about $7 billion. And, I mean, year to date, it's up 8%. It certainly hasn't been on quite the tear like Iron Mountain does. And you know how much I love storage REITs. So I'm going to have to go with Iron Mountain.
Okay, I'll go with RHP. I like being different than you today.
Bold.
Kimberly Clark. There you go. Kimberly Clark is next. KMB versus Prudential, PRU. Kimberly Clark, relative strength only 30. And its earnings trajectory is pretty solid, up 5% this year, 6% next year. But latest quarter, revenues were flat. Earnings were down 2%. A lot of debt on its balance sheets. I don't think it'll be a great setup heading into tomorrow. What about Prudential?
Yeah, well, Prudential is a life insurance and health insurance company. Not a lot of short interest out there. They've been buying back shares over the past 5 years. Their earnings projections have been upgraded. Their relative strength is okay. And over the past 3 months, they've definitely been on an uptrend while their profitability and cash flow have both been improving. I think I'm going to have to go on for Prudential on this one.
I would agree with you on that. Definitely better momentum there. The next one would be Lamar Advertising versus One Oak, OKE. Now, Lamar is a REIT, like a lot of these income companies in the income region are. 4.4% yield, and they mainly have billboards. They own a ton of billboards throughout the United States on really a tear. Revenue was up 4% last quarter, but earnings were up 125%. Relative strength at 83. So looking good heading into tomorrow. What about OKE?
Okay, we actually got a call about OKE yesterday. I believe it's a natural gas storage and distribution company. Great cash flows, great profitability. Their earnings may take a little bit of a dip last year, but they had some pretty outsized earnings last year. And I believe we actually hold this one for clients. It's up 13% year to date. I'm going to have to go with OKE, home field advantage here.
Home field advantage. Yeah, I'm going to go with Lamar just because OKE is a little overbought. Lamar just had a recent pullback and was up today. So, you know, it's a little less frothy near term. But obviously, I like ONEOK as a business better than Lamar. The last one would be Marathon Petroleum, MPC versus NRG. Marathon, it is a refining company, marketer and transporter of petroleum products, mainly in the Midwest. And it is also on a tear, relative strength at 92, only a 1.7% yield here, but $72 billion market cap. So very large company trading at pretty decent multiples, single digit P ratio. What about NRG?
NRG is an electric utility. I love its ticker because if you say it fast, it's energy. I think that's very creative. They're up 100% in the past 52 weeks. Year to date, they're up 30%. And because of that, their price to book is at 8.2, which is well over the high of their five-year average. It's pretty expensive right now. If you look at the chart, you see it's been up a lot. It's up from 60 to 60, 68 in the past month or so. I think I'm going to have to go with energy on this one, just because I like the ticker, if I'm being honest.
I'll go with Marathon, mainly because energy, it's pretty overbought, very, very overbought. And MPC has a nice setup heading into tomorrow. But once again, we will see. The end of the first round is tomorrow, and round two begins on Monday. And we'll be previewing the Monday matchups tomorrow as well. Well, that about does it. Another episode of Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.